Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
And you certainly are. And today we're going to talk about sustaining diversity, or
Little boxes. And they're all made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
Okay.
Hey, there's a song about that.
I know. I always think of Pete Seeger. Did he write it, or did someone else?
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, let's talk about diversity. And diversity can mean a lot of things.
When I think about diversity, I see all the colors. There are millions of them, except we seem to think there are only a few. And that's how I see diversity.
Okay. To make white light, you need a rainbow.
All the colors.
Okay. All right. Well, you were talking about before when we were talking about this subject about microbes and microbes,
yeah.
And each microbe touches each microbe.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the heck that means. So explain that to me.
Well, I think that every microbe touches every microbe. We're all touching each other and we're touching everything. It's connected. And I find this to be very comforting, to think that we all somehow are connected. And that's powerful. And if we believe that, then we recognize the real power and the need. We need each other, and we need all the things that surround us. And the problem that we're facing is that a lot of those things that have sustained us as human beings, as animals, as insects, as soil, as air, have been erased, just really erased. What we should be trying to do is to create balance. Balance in that diversity. So if there are bad bugs, there are good bugs because they need everything needs the food. But we are so far out of balance right now. It's not funny. So
we've talked about that balance in terms of gardening. When you talk about pests, you know, one pest balancing the other pest. Talk about it in medical healthcare, where these illnesses or negatives, what we typically would think of like as bad bacteria or whatever, are present all the time. They're just kept in check. They're kept in balance.
Well, the body has the ability to do that if we don't keep erasing the stuff that controls the balance.
And an example of that would be like antibiotics, right? When you're a healthy person has the bad otics, I don't know, biotics, they have those bad bacteria, they have good bacteria, everything is in balance.
Right.
When you give yourself antibiotics or you have antibiotics, it's like wiping the battlefield clean. And then whichever one is more adapted for rapid infiltration of this clean battlefield is going to then be dominant. No longer is there a balance.
Well, we've destroyed the body's ability to reinvent the balance. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's antibiotic. But why we never think about probiotics. So what if we, instead of wiping out all of the bacteria, we said to the good bacteria here, have some help, and we create lots more good bacteria.
Well, and what we find on the micro scale is true in the larger scale of plants and animals providing balance, and that's what we talk about, nature and Darwinism and all these other things of getting into this balance of each species balancing the other. And you can even talk about cultural balance.
Absolutely.
All these cultures
Absolutely.
Are in balance with it. So yeah. That's what we're talking about with diversity. If you want to just think about it and say, okay, what have we been doing on larger scales like antibiotics, right? We're coming in and we're wiping out species, whether that's through global warming or through the way we plant our crops.
Or anything. Because every single system that exists is being influenced and collapsing, if you will, under the weight of this imbalance. And one of the things that started this discussion was that I read an article a little while ago, maybe in the fall, about a study that was done on biodiversity, which is really about everything that exists. And I just started crying because what really matters is that we are destroying all of the systems that create this balance in our lives for health and for everything. An example would be that the world's supply of bananas, oranges, coffee, and coconuts are basically down to one strain. And that's because we've relied on only one strain and we've killed off everything else. And I don't know about you, but I'm not sure that I can live without coconuts and bananas.
Well, I know, you know.
Wait, how about coffee?
Coffee.
That should get everybody
coffee.
Excited except
okay.
me.
All right, you're starting to wander into territory that is forbidden as far as.
I know it, but coffee's in trouble. The coffee plant is in trouble because there's only one kind. And actually, there are 12 of, I don't know how many plants that we actually consume, you know, on average in the world, something like 15 or 16 plants that we actually consume as we eat. We have such a narrow.
Well, there's more than that, but these are the dominant.
These
ones.
Are the most eaten things. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that they're down to one, too. So when we look at tomatoes, which under the Mayans, there were 5,000 varieties of tomatoes. Well, we look at some of the other things. The most common foods that we eat now are onions. I know that's not in your food group. And cabbage or brassicas. So that would be broccoli and cauliflower and things like that. Brussels sprouts. I know those aren't in your food group either.
Those are one of the top ones?
Yeah.
Boy, for British Christmas
see.
Meals, maybe.
No. Well, brassicas, I said.
Okay,
so that
right.
family. So cabbage and brassicas. Cucumbers are next. Eggplants. High on your food group, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then carrots and turnips, they're in the same food group. And then chilies and peppers, also in your food group. You're not going to be in any trouble.
I haven't heard Butterfinger listed
no.
any of these.
Lettuce and chicory, spinach and garlic. These are the main vegetables that people, this is the count for the whole world, that consume.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these are in great trouble.
Well, I know with bananas, you had mentioned bananas, and I've seen that. You know, I had heard or read something somewhere about these blights that come in and how they'll wipe out entire species of these bananas. So the bananas that we're consuming today were really considered to be the trash bananas.
Yeah, but they've managed to survive all the diseases
right.
that the banana industry has managed to create through that imbalance. The other things are, and this is your food group here,
mm-hmm. okay.
the other issues are barley, corn, rice, and wheat. These are the main grains that are consumed as a worldwide.
The main ingredients of Fruit Loops, right?
But here's the thing is that, you know, we can ask ourselves, well, why is this happening? And it really is about greed and the likes of companies like Monsanto, who control 2/3 of the global seed market. They own 1/4 of the seed industry itself and 60% of all seeds. 94% of all seeds are owned because there was a quirk in the wording for the patent law in this country. And with all their money, like with the likes of Monsanto and 7 other or 8 other companies, they were able to come in and really take all the patents and patent seeds and control seeds and own seeds. And the U.S. Constitution is very clear about not being able to do that.
Right. So we're basically patenting a living organism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which seems a little bit wrong.
Well, but we mm-hmm. but the real issue here is the fact that corporations, in their singular thinking, have taken over food. And we cannot survive as human beings. Some of us will survive longer. Some animals will survive longer. Some plants will survive longer. But without balance, we must have balance. So things are going, living forms are capable of altering to become resilient or to be more resilient against these imbalances. In that way of thinking, we've lost 94% of the species since 1976.
Okay, and is this because of Monsanto? Can we blame them or are there other people to blame?
It comes down to the imbalance. So it is mm-hmm. the monoculture.
So it's a combination
thinking.
Of things. It's the way that we prepare and grow our food, which is one of them.
Yeah.
And it's changes in climate, which is another.
But that's come from the behavior of whatever we want to call it. It doesn't matter who's the cause. The problem mm-hmm. is that we have influenced the ozone layer. We've created this amazing amount of carbon. People think they don't do things like that. But if you have one plane flight, you've pretty much destroyed the amount of carbon you should be allowed to have for your lifetime.
Well, and actually, I I'll throw out a statistic. You know, 98% of all statistics are just made up, which is another of these. But, I had read that actually the destruction of the rainforest, the monoculture mechanism that we have where we're cutting down forests to raise beef and things of that nature actually has a more detrimental impact on climate than actually the burning of fossil fuels.
So, well, yeah, because that's the lungs of the earth.
Right. And so when we talk about, people might say, well, I ride my bicycle or I do these other things. I can divorce myself away from that.
But
and
I
the
still
reality
eat
is,
meat.
Yeah. The reality is our Western lifestyle with all these people on the planet is having an effect. And that effect is a mass extinction of the biodiversity of this planet, whether as a result of some of our activities or a direct cause. When we chop down a rainforest and
so
raise cattle.
So we can raise cattle, yep.
Yeah, that changes the biodiversity directly.
Well, I think, you know, these are all words that maybe some of us can throw around and other people have no idea. But if we come back to the concept of balance, you know, think about a teeter-totter. When I was a kid, I loved to go on the teeter-totter, but it had to be with somebody I trusted. Because if they jumped off and my bottom hit the ground, boom, that hurt like hell. Oh, excuse my French. And
so basically Monsanto is jumping off the teeter-totter.
Yeah, and the human race is
on the
other
end. You're cracking your tailbone
on
the hard reality of global warming.
That's
How
right.
is that for an expression?
Oh, that's that deep. So, mm-hmm. That's deep. And there's another cuss word that goes with that too. But here's the thing is that we need to have that balance. So when that teeter-totter is even, we can still have fun and we can still have a life, but we have to create this balance in our own lives. And I know that whatever I do has absolutely no impact on global warming. Absolutely, it does not. But it has an influence on my life and the quality of my life that I have balance. I'm not caught up in the culture of the roller coaster of this culture. And I am reasonably healthy in that even though I'm still breathing a lot of air that I probably don't want to breathe as far as pollution and things like that, and I go out into the world where I eat commodity foods that are raised in a horrible way that aren't healthy, sometimes I do eat those foods. But mostly what I can do is have control over my own life in that I can produce food in a healthy way. I can save and store seeds. I can make a commitment to zero waste. I can make a commitment to using organics that are locally produced, because Walmart organics, I will go to my deathbed saying that's bologna sausage. It's an oxymoron. But to make these kind of commitments, all they do is require you to have a little bit of planning and a little bit of thinking. And we seem to have a problem with that.
So you're saying that just because the problem that we're facing on a global scale is essentially one that you can't tackle as an individual,
you can
tackle those issues around your own behavior.
Yeah.
And whether that has an impact on the global aspect of biodiversity or whatever, it really is more about walking the walk. You know, talking
about having a better
life. Feeling
better
internally. Be the change you want to see in the world. Right?
And I can also try to take these things and make sure that my yard, or maybe work with my neighbors, or certainly my farm, has the ability to at least be regenerating soil and putting good microbes back into the soil. I can do all that. And maybe at some point, if enough people try to do these things, it will have an impact. But for right now, I can't change anything except for myself. And this is a big argument in the world of ecology now, because, you know, the government has said, or activists have said, if you just turn off your faucet or repair your leaky faucet, or if you just grow veggies and eat this, blah, 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 and, you're going to make things better for the rest of the world. And that's not true.
Okay, well, you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you that it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God, yeah. And actually, the world as we know it, obviously, is leading towards a monoculture internally, through medical, through
throat?
It's
not leading, Jay. It's there. We're there. This is why we're in so much trouble.
Okay, we have a monoculture in our food industry. We have a monoculture in our media entertainment. We have a monoculture in our transportation, in our energy systems.
In our beliefs,
yep. And now, you know, even more so, which we'll get to in a wee bit, we're trying to create this monoculture within our culture, you know.
Yeah.
Let's keep the other out. You know, let's focus on the sameness. You know, sameness is good. Diversity is bad.
But just let me say, it's too late. The door can't be shut. We all started coming here.
It's never too late.
No, wait. We
say
all,
it isn't so,
everybody
Joe.
That's here came from somewhere else. It may not be that it was this generation, but everybody came from somewhere else. And this is our story, so we erase those stories. A lot of people in this country don't even know their grandparents' full name.
Okay, before we tiptoe into that, though, let's talk about some of the less politically sensitive issues of diversity.
Oh, these are all politically sensitive
everything's
issues.
Politics.
Yes.
In this world, if you don't agree with me, by God, you're wrong.
Well, let's go back to the whole thing again, just focusing on food and the fact that every system in our culture is promoting this mono thinking, this singular thinking. So if we look at the government, we look at like things like the food pyramids. They change them periodically, but they're really based on making money for the agriculture industry, which is not the farmer, unfortunately. It is for groups like Monsanto or Arthur Daniels Midland, chemical producing companies like DuPont. These are the people making all of the money and not seeming to understand that what they're doing is destroying the ability to survive.
Well, when you mention the government, it seems to me that the whole concept behind governmental laws are essentially saying one size fits all, right? That I have come up with a regulation and this is what we're going to do. And that almost by its very definition is going to try to create a monoculture of behavior, you know, instead of saying that each individual situation has its own situational aspects and maybe the laws cannot be simply laid down. But that seems unworkable, you know, from a governance standpoint.
Right. But as long as there are only 12 food groups that you're eating from.
Okay, we're back to food. I was more on speeding tickets and things like
that. Yeah, okay,
this.
But as long as there are only those 12, and as long as I can follow you around, like now can be done very easily. It could be done before, but it's done pretty easily now because you use a credit card, you shop online, you talk online, you look at things online, you research things online. So these companies that are into trying to manage and make a very singular thought out of each human being, then are able to market to you why you should buy certain things because you are not human, you're a consumer. You're not a human being, you're a consumer. And what you consume is what makes them rich. And so if you are limiting your choices, that's so much easier to manage.
Okay, I was trying to get this back to diversity. So that's where was on my face. So okay, so so you're basically saying that from a corporate standpoint, a lack of diversity is helpful because you can now conglomerate these consumer expectations into very small groups. You know, instead of having 5,000 different automobiles that you can choose from, now you've got, you know, 8 or 6 or 10 or whatever.
And we know what words will get you to do what we want you to do. So we'll market to you. We know what words you're using to search for these things. So we know how to determine how that all works for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm not into Big Brother. This is not what I'm talking about.
So now you're pushing towards a monoculture of thought.
Yes, that's right. And so what that does is make us more easily manageable, particularly when it comes to things like fear and all the other stuff that goes with that. But again, everything on this list does start with the food, Jay, in spite of the fact that those food groups that are in trouble are not of interest to you.
Well, you mentioned coffee. I'm already a little worried about that.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people should be worried. Although we have chicory that grows on the farm. We can dig up the roots and roast
them. Don't mention chicory.
You may be desperate.
That would be very desperate.
You better start buying up coffee, you know, like when we lived in France.
A 55-gallon drum.
Yeah. When we came back from France, I don't know how many you had smuggled, how many bags, 1 pound bags of coffee, your favorite coffee from France, but there were quite a lot. And if we'd gotten caught, there would be $800 fine for each one of those little bags.
That's all right, it'd be worth it. Okay, so let's look at some other. You've I think beaten the idea of food diversity, and I think that's very, you know, valid for sure. Is we need a diversity, if nothing more than to keep the foods that we like available to us. The diversity.
But here's the thing that's really hard is, and this is the part that's I think the most disturbing is, how do people go to the market or the grocery store and figure out what to buy, because the whole system is set up to use the same 5 or 6 foods. They just mix them up differently. Mm-hmm. And when something says it's what it is, it often is not. And when we keep talking about you should buy from people you know, that's really the only way. But how do we do that? So we live in a rural area where most farmers don't raise their own food. They raise commodity foods.
Yeah, soy, corn,
wheat, hay.
Well, around here, I mean, it's really just hay, corn, and soy.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
and you
oats,
rotate
you see,
them,
oats, yeah.
But you rotate them through.
Yeah.
And this year everybody's raising corn, and next year everybody's raising soy. And
yeah, well, because they have to replenish, because corn's such an evil
right.
plant, robs the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem then becomes, yes, we might know that this is all wrong. And the more you drill down, the more you realize, oh my gosh, I probably shouldn't be shopping at that big grocery store that's down the street. I should be going to the local market. Okay, but like, where's the local market? And especially in the wintertime, where is that? And where's that local farmer mm-hmm. that you know, because you can see how they're growing and what they're spraying or not spraying? And
okay, so I was going to ask you, you know, we've identified the problem. Okay, I'm convinced diversity is an issue.
Well,
what do we do?
Thank you.
There you go. You got me. You got me. All right.
I know it was coffee that got it. That was the thing.
Yeah, you had me at coffee. Right?
Okay, I'm glad you know that.
So what do we do? You know, what do we do? Do we?
First of all, we've got to boycott, and we need to make it clear we're boycotting certain things. And we need to go to stores and put little notes saying, don't buy this product because it's a lie or it has chemicals that make you sick or whatever.
So make yourself an obnoxious consumer.
No, you can just go put little notes on these
things.
I want
to be an obnoxious
consumer.
You do?
Okay. Well, I say accidental activist.
Yeah, well.
That's my thing. But and then we don't support these companies, because the thing is, we're donating and we're voting with that money that we work hard to earn.
Yeah, we like to say every dollar is a vote.
Yes, it is. So every time we vote for that local farmer or that local urban gardener who's growing that food in our community, we're saying, yes, this is what we want, and we're helping that person to do well, and we're helping ourselves to do well. But by going to the big grocery store, and I don't care how much they say, oh, we're so kind to our employees and we're so great to all of our, you know, vendors, and I'm not naming any names, but every single grocery store that's of any size at all practically has nothing you should eat there, because it is not what
except
it says.
Except for the
it
coffee.
I don't know. And I do know about coffee, but I mean, mm-hmm. I know how it grows, but I don't know what it gets sprayed with or anything like that. But what I'm getting at is, we have to think about this a lot more than we have thought about it. And even for somebody like me, who doesn't really buy that many things at the grocery store, I still feel very frustrated. I'm quite anxious that our local farmers market is going to actually start having a spring market. I'm anxious to get more greens.
Anxious in a good way, not a bad way, right?
I'm anxious in a bad way right now, because I don't have access to good greens.
Gotcha.
And so I have started some greens, and I usually grow greens in the winter, but I haven't done it this year. So the reality is, you know, we can do these things for ourselves, but most people are not going to.
Okay, well, I'm gonna redirect the conversation away from food here for a little bit, because we only have a few more minutes. But when you're talking about diversity, at least in my mind, the first thing that comes up has to do with cultural diversity, you know, ethnic, racial, religious diversity. And it feels like politically at this moment in time, that's something that's that on the one hand, on the one extreme political end is being celebrated, and on the other political extreme is being restricted, but it's more demonized or made to be feared. So,
well, I think it's even worse than that. Taking your children away and then saying they're disappeared and you don't know where they are, and and sexually assaulting people that are being held.
Okay, so I can see it's clear you're on the one end of the extreme.
I'm looking at the facts,
right,
man.
But let's look at this from a clinical standpoint, right?
I don't think it's clinical.
Okay, but the minute you put that, you know, then people's minds just shut off. So I'm saying, okay,
I don't care.
Now you're being an obnoxious consumer.
I don't care.
So, but if we look at it and say, just from a biodiversity standpoint of diversity within our culture, immigration, various beliefs, various perspectives is healthy to the environment and good for all participants in that environment, just like it is in a garden, right? One protects you from the pests or the demons or the whatever of the other. You know, one idea in a cultural standpoint, if there is a diversity of thought and opinion, will not dominate or take over or cause widespread fungus infection of our minds.
Well,
that sounded good, actually. Infection of our minds.
Okay.
Let me make a note of that.
Yeah, write it down. Put it on the calendar. Mm-hmm. I think the reality is, and I'm just going to speak from my own experiences, and that is that many of the things that enrich my life did not come from someone who speaks English as their first language. I learned from them in this country. I learned from them by traveling and living in other places. And I think that we deny ourselves the truth about the goodness that life has to offer when we have a lot of different ideas. And we also learn how to be civil by being exposed to lots more ideas and lots more kinds of people. And so the less we have these experiences, the more we hunker down and then we're like fearful because, you know, you're different from me and all that baloney.
But the civility, which you raised, seems to be something that's in short order.
Well, I don't think we don't teach it. We don't model it. We're modeling a lot of things, but not that. And even where we live or shop or whatever, I'm sure people can say that they see this lack of civility. That's why when something goes wrong and a bunch of people show up and try to help, everybody starts going, see how nice everybody is. But the minute there'd be a disagreement in that group, there's probably a fist fight or a gun pulled, you know?
It just reminded me, we were eating at a restaurant and it was getting crowded. And as we were leaving and there was people coming in and there were a few people waiting. And one woman said to her husband, I don't want to wait. It's going to be too long. And you said,
oh, it's not a long wait. They just cleared the tables. And she looked at her husband. She goes, she's a liar. Just like that. I'm like, you don't know me. Oh, my God.
When she gets to know you, then she can call you a liar.
Yeah, I was thinking, listen here, old woman. I'm an old woman, too. I'm going to kick your butt.
Okay. All right. So, sum it up in 15 seconds, Miss Kick Your Butt.
Well, so all of this comes back to the bottom line, and that's about balance. And when we talk about things like immigration, you know, we need immigration. We need their thoughts and their brilliance and their backs and their labor and their sweetness and mm-hmm. all the things that those people are bringing that they want to be here.
So you're saying that that isolationism is the antibiotic of society, which will kill us in the end.
Wow. Yeah, you better write that one down. That's a book title.
Okay. Well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our producer, Adam Rich, and thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others. That's the civility part. Clean up your own mess and eat your vegetables, Jay, even those Brussels sprouts.
All right. Till next time.
Mother Earth will sing and her children will be healed. Come out and see the morning glory blossom in the night. Know the skies are dancing in twilight. Soon we'll be together, all will be revealed. Mother Earth will sing and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.